We acknowledge that we are on Treaty 6 territory, the gathering grounds of many diverse First Nations, Métis, and Inuit peoples whose footsteps have marked this land and whose presence continues to enrich our vibrant community. Hello and welcome back to Research Recasted, the Knowledge Mobilization Podcast. I'm Brooklyn Lustician and I'm here with Natalie Smattis.
Hello everyone.
In today's episode, we are joined by Dr. Roland Lee and Trevor Mundell. Dr. Roland Lee is an expert in green chemistry, flow chemistry, catalysis, process design, supercritical fluids, bioproducts, biomass conversion, and alternative solvents. Dr. Lee has been working extensively in biofuel research over the last couple of years, looking at everything from the extraction of free fatty acids from algae biomass through the use of novel extraction solvents for the production of biodiesel, and conversion of cellulosic biomass to biojet fuel, along with projects looking at the production of syngas and separation and conversion of lignin for the production of bioproducts. Trevor Mundell is the co-founder and CEO of Modular Green Tech, an alum of the University of Alberta. Trevor is the visionary founder and CEO of New Era. With over 12 years of dedication experience in the field, Trevor has emerged as a leading chemist, tirelessly advancing the frontiers of pyrolysis technology, renowned for his ability to unravel unconventional solutions to traditional challenges. Trevor spearheads New Era commitments to revolutionizing waste management.
Now, Trevor's in a meeting with Alberta Innovates right now, but he'll join us halfway through.
Awesome. Perfect.
Sounds good.
Well, thank you for being with us here today.
No problems. And thank you very much for having me.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And Trevor will say the same once he gets here.
We've already had a good discussion, but now we just got to record it. So very interesting research. Very just wow.
I just don't have any words.
As we were saying beforehand, you don't overcomplicate it. Chemistry is the easiest science on the planet. It's simple stuff.
I don't know. But well, now we'll see. How did you get into the chemistry field and into your field?
So I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. There's only really three reasons to get into chemistry. Everyone's going to lie and they're going to say it's because they want to change the world. No, that's not the case. There's actually only three reasons to get into chemistry. Those three reasons are pretty colors, explosions, and drugs. Unfortunately, the third one is always drugs. Yes, Breaking Bad exists. And yes, there was an uptake in chemistry as a result of Breaking Bad.
Naturally.
I'm not going to go into details on that side. I do have friends who are in jail or have been in jail as a result of that world. But I actually got into it because of explosions. Things go bang. As a nine-year-old boy, things going bang is really fun.
That's exciting.
Different world, different place. I was allowed to make things go bang. I was making my own explosives, and that's why I got into chemistry. It's just great fun. So if you ever actually see a beach full of people with fireworks in the background, all three reasons to get into chemistry are right there on that beach. Pretty colors, explosions, and somebody's doing drugs on the beach, and you know it.
And that's why there are fireworks there.
Yes, exactly.
Perfect. With your chemistry experience, can you explain a little bit about what green chemistry is?
Okay. So the first thing we have to note is it's not about the color.
This time it's not.
This time it's not
about the color. We're not dealing with the color in this case. So the idea behind green chemistry is it's looking at how we can take our traditional synthetic methods or chemistry and we can try to make it better for the environment. And it turns out that that can also have effects on the business side of things. So we can actually improve the profitability of businesses, but additionally we can look at improving the impact on the environment. And it's really important that we do that. And there's a lot of ways we can go about that. And so the work in that field can be related to biofuels, can be related to CO2 conversion or reduction in waste. But it can also look at things like when we look at these two cups that are in front of us, one is ceramic and one is a takeaway mug. And it can look at how do we actually think that this ceramic mug is actually more environmentally friendly than this disposable paper mug. Now, if you look at these, which one is better for the environment?
I'm going to say the ceramic one because you can
reuse
it.
I think so too.
How many times do I have to reuse it before it's better for the environment than the paper one?
probably a lot.
It's 1,000 times.
Which?
1,000 times. That means 3 coffees a day, every day, in the same mug for a year.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
And that's a ceramic mug.
It's a lot of coffee.
That is a hell of a lot of coffee. No, it's not. That's no, that's like half a year for me.
Some people can do that, yeah.
But the honest answer is that's ceramic. You know your wonderful metal mug that you have that everyone's now sporting? Mm. That's about 10,000 times.
Ooh. Is it just like from the like pollution of the like factories and stuff?
Yeah, broadly speaking. Mm. I mean, what you have to remember is you need to collect that ceramic. You need to process it so it's nice and clean. Mm. You need to then form it. And all of those things are taking energy. And then you have to cook it at very, very high temperatures. Paper is terrible for the environment. It's just better than ceramic. Now, let's think about paper bags, plastic bags, and reusable bags. Mm-hmm. Now, you know Alberta has changed over to the paper bag. And we're all like, yay, this is great. Okay.
Sure.
There's 3 people in the room right now. Trevor will join us later. And I go to the store and I buy a plastic bag every single time because I am a terrible human being. You go to the store every time and you take your reusable bag every time and you pick up the paper bag every time. Mm-hmm. Now, the first time we go, which one of the 3 of us is the greenest?
Probably the reusable bag.
Plastic bag.
Oh. What?
Plastic bag is the greenest. Second time we go, who's the greenest?
I would say reusable.
Plastic. Third time?
Plastic.
And getting plastic each time?
Yep. A new bag every time.
The third one?
Plastic.
Let's say plastic.
Reusable.
Oh.
So the thing is those reusable bags are made from old plastic bags.
Oh.
True.
And so then you have to reprocess the plastic bag and it takes more plastic to make that reusable bag. Mm. So it's 2 to 3 times before that pays off. The paper bag is 1,000 times worse than the plastic bag.
Oh, no.
So this whole stopping us using plastic bags is worse for the environment by going to the paper.
That's crazy.
It's the water use. It's the chemicals that are used in the system. The thing is that they don't look as bad on the side of the road. So to the normal person, it's greener to use the paper because it's not trash. It will biodegrade.
Interesting.
In however many years?
Yep. And it'll create methane. So that'll be great. So there's green chem for you, just to really, you know, muck with your entire ideas of society at this point in time.
Thank you. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. You don't feel bad about your choices at all now, do you?
No.
No, no.
I'm going to start being worse. I'm just kidding. So what made you want to kind of like invest lots of your time to green chemistry?
So I was really fortunate. And so when I finished up my university degrees in Oz, I moved out to Quebec for 2 years and I was doing a lot of chemical engineering. And then I went to work with one of my bosses, previous bosses, Philip Jessup, who's a powerhouse in the green chem world. And his enthusiasm for that really kind of helped me get that base point and allowed me to see the fun within it. And one of the things that we forget is that we've got to treat everything as fun. Like if you're going into work and you're not having fun, what's the point? So I love research. I love what I do and I love telling people about green chemistry because it just screws with their entire life, doesn't it? You guys now are reevaluating everything you've done. Now, when I first got to McEwen, I had a stupid idea. So I had worked out previously that I can take sugar or cellulose and I can use carbon dioxide as the catalyst and I can actually convert that into a precursor for jet fuel. So it works. That's cool.
Magic.
No, exactly. It's pure magic, not chemistry at all. but what if I instead take Coca-Cola and I do the exact same process but with Coca-Cola? Well, you can make biojet fuel from Coca-Cola. In fact, in order to do it, what you do is you take Coca-Cola and you cook Coca-Cola and then you add nail polish remover. And now you've got the precursor for biojet fuel.
Wow.
There's one step left and you can put it into a jet. That simple. But Coca-Cola is not a good starting point. It's got too many other things in there. Mm-hmm. What you want is Perrier water, like the expensive stuff, okay? And it's because it doesn't have the sugars, it doesn't have the caramel and doesn't have all the rest of that jazz, which actually cause problems. But you need the CO2 there. If you take the carbonated water and then you add sugar to it, you actually have the platform chemical hydroxymethylfurfural. Doesn't matter. Just smile and nod. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's just a chemical that's a precursor in chemistry for making biojet fuel. Then we take acetone, which is the stuff in nail polish mm-hmm. remover. We add it in and we cook it again a second round. And that gives you the biojet fuel backbone. And then we just have to get rid of the oxygen. And so when I first came here, I literally had a student that was doing that and was just hilariously fun just for the hell of it. Because I was like, I can make this with stuff from home. I'll just bring in some Coke from home. Once it's got to the lab, you don't take it out. Don't drink it in the lab. But yeah, no, that was what we were doing. Now, how that translates to some of the work with Trevor, who again is still not here just to make things annoying for us, is that Trevor happened to be in the lab when I was doing some of that. And we were doing a whole range of different stuff, including taking cockroaches and making biojet fuel from cockroaches just for the fun of it. But Trevor was listening in and he went, wow, that's pretty cool. And he told me a bit about his project at the time, which is that pyrolysis stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was giving him some information from my first postdoc on how to get a mass balance for him. And he ran with that. And we've been basically chatting on and off since then. And he's done very, very well for himself now. So, yeah.
So what are you going to do with your biojet fuel?
So we have a number of projects that are going on at the moment. So right now with Trevor, we actually have some translations to industry right now. And we're actually converting CO2 with some fairly basic chemistry into a precursor for biofuels in general. And we're actually putting that into the airport. We're hoping to have an interview with the airport some point very soon, and we're going to be building a full-scale system there in the next 6 to 12 months. Huh. And that'll be converting about 75 liters of CO2 per minute. And my research assistant is going to move over onto that project and going to work down there. And that'll actually produce two streams, one of which is a drop-in fuel for either jets or cars called dimethyl carbonate. The second one is actually a coolant or a de-icing solution. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be producing that. The other streams along those lines, we have a couple of pieces of technology. So we've been developing lab scale tech for these projects, but it turns out you can't buy them. Mm. So we've developed those and now we're actually looking at how we can apply them to other things. So you mentioned lignin conversion. So one of the projects that we're about to start is converting lignin into various biofuels. We're also starting projects looking at cellulose conversion, and we're also looking at a whole range of other waste materials to convert. So a lot of my work is aimed at, you have a waste material, how can I convert it to something worthwhile? And it's looking at that side of things. And then I develop the technology to do it.
That's awesome.
Trevor's made it into the room, so I should probably hand it back to you guys to then ask him a couple of questions and piss him off for a bit.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So, hi, Trevor.
Well, hello. Thanks for having me on today.
Thanks for coming. We started before with Roland, kind of asking how you got started in your field and what that kind of looked like for you.
Absolutely. So a bit of an interesting story. I was an oil and gas guy right out of school. There weren't a lot of amazing opportunities for chemists or ones that I enjoyed. I didn't want to stand around in a lab working for somebody else all day. So it really kind of forced me out of the mold I was comfortable with into kind of blazing my own path. What did that mean? Well, that meant I had to go do a lot of looking around for the available resources, how to access different types of funds, how to even start a business. I had no idea. I was a chemist, right? So no business experience. Mm-hmm. What drove me into this field was I saw that there was a need for basically a better implementation of the technology available. Mm-hmm. So traditional methods, as they stand, especially in the waste management, as Roland's probably already alluded to, there's a lot of traditional standards that aren't really environmentally friendly or what I would see as acceptable trade practices.
Mm. Can you give an example?
Absolutely. So landfills, I think, are a primary example. Not to mention the portion of recycling that goes on or doesn't go on with these landfills is also a big issue. So one of the ones that I saw that really got me started was agricultural wastes. And what I mean by this is silage plastics and grain bags. So if you're driving up the QE2 and you see those big, long white tubes, those are usually grain bags. And what do you do with those grain bags after you're done weathering the grain in them? You roll them up and you bury them in the back 40. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of an issue that I saw. It's just being like, okay, well, how can we do better? How can we bridge this gap between technology and innovation into a commercial atmosphere? How can we make this stuff viable? And what I mean by that is it has to be economically viable. If at the end of the day, you can't afford to implement these technologies, they're not going to go anywhere.
Right.
So how do we get out of the lab and into a commercial atmosphere while bringing these practices, these green practices, and better awareness of the issues? So that's what got me started, was driving along the QE2, seeing all these waste plastics, working for oil field companies, knowing exactly that I was instantly just part of this problem. Mm-hmm. I was just perpetuating the same machine. So I had to go up and branch out. I had to find opportunities. And honestly, once you start looking, there's many, many different available routes and options. You just have to be willing to put in the work. So for me, that was about 14 years ago that I decided to start working on some of these side projects, till about very recently, 3.5 years ago, I had to do those all outside of, you know, regular work hours. I would go do my 9 to 5 in the oil field, and then I'd come home and try and start a company on the side.
That's rough.
So
that's long hours.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's part of the reason that I'm happy that I'm here today.
Paid off.
Well, we're still technically a pre-revenue startup, so it hasn't paid off yet. But how can we reduce that lag period? How can people who want to do something similar not have to experience what I've already been through? How do we cut that time in half? So that's really what's my driving force still to this day, is that innovation. How do we get here more efficiently?
How do you translate it? So the thing is that what Trevor is not saying is he's a genius at translating Roland's research crap into something that industry is interested in, or something that they'll pay attention to. So he's not saying that, but that's what he should be saying, translation.
That's exactly it. And so that's kind of what I mean by getting it out of the lab and getting it into the business world. How do we make people understand these sometimes highly technical ideas and get those funded, built out, and then commercialized? It's exactly that. It's how do I take this man's mind and his millions of ideas, basically distill that down to one or two core concepts, and then make that understandable by the public, by the masses. And I'd say that probably goes right back to what I think I walked in with you talking about, lignin conversion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why should I care?
Yeah.
What does that mean for me? Just a regular everyday guy.
Yeah.
I have no idea. How do we translate and distill that down into a concept or an idea that is understood by everyone and actually has value? So that is absolutely it. It's a big issue that we experience, I think, in the academic world is, we pride ourselves on putting out papers. What do these papers do? When do people ever pick these papers up and go to market with them? And what I saw was never. I knew a lot of people and I worked with a lot of people, and they said, I need to get two more publications under my belt so I can then get published in this. It's like, well, why? Why do you want to be published? Oh, for them, it was a bar of entry, essentially. I get to prove my worth by saying I have this many publications that have been cited this many times to use for this many different papers. Perfect. I think that's great. That's amazing. What are people doing with those papers, though?
Yeah.
What are we doing with all this massive information that we've now generated? Most of the time, it's just putting it on the back burner, waiting for someone else to do it.
Most of the time?
Almost all of the time, yes. So that's become my job, is basically finding these different holes, these different gaps, these different areas where I think that implementation of more efficient technologies, especially in the green world, in the green chem practice, can really be beneficial for not only the world, the environment, our own livelihoods. I was going crazy in the oil field. Sitting in a truck for 12 hours a day, and you do maybe 45 minutes worth of work, and just going absolutely crazy. So that's my driving force. That's a little bit about how I got here, and why I'm still at it. Like I said, I'd love to cut that time in half for anyone else coming through this same pipeline.
That's super cool. Good work. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Not there yet, but.
But it's a process. It's
absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm going to get you guys to go a little bit more into your collaboration with Modular Green Technologies and where you'd like to go with Modular Green Technologies.
Absolutely. Maybe I'll start off with this, a little bit of an intro of So I am a founder. I'm the COO of Modular Green Tech. And our collaboration, especially here at Grant McEwen, has been, I think, just of crucial importance furthering the company. And very recently, we've come up with a few ideas of how we can translate that forwards, how we can get more students involved, how we can essentially generate a pipeline. So how is that going to look as a collaboration? We're still actually working on that, but I think we've come up with a pretty good idea. We're looking into basically an incubator program. And I would say, Roland, honestly, if you want to step in,
I'm happy to step in. What Trevor's talking here is the long-term goals. This is the three-year goal, where our hope is that we can get a whole bunch of industry and academic partners in to a room, and then we can look at getting a couple of $1 million, you know, 10, 20, whatever. And actually, you know, like the Yellowhead Brewery is actually for sale. They shut down and they're for sale. So the idea would be that we would buy it, whether it's as the university side or from the industry side, and set up, as Trevor said, this incubator system with these three different goals in mind, and they kind of lead one to the next, which is a research for research sake. So people can come in, they can do their research. Mm. And industry, if they're working with us, has to fund that, because research for research sake is important. But then applied research, and that's kind of where I step in, and that's the, okay, so we have a problem with lignin. How can we make a value-added product from it that industry can make money out of? This is a process to do it. We develop the process and we go through that. And then the third stage is kind of translation to business. Mm-hmm. And this would be for students who want to be entrepreneurs. They come in with their idea, they can work with us, and they go through. Or it would be for academics. They have an idea, they can come in, they can work with us. They can then interact, both the students and the other academics can interact with potential investors and businesses. But businesses can come in with their problems and they can then access mm-hmm. the facility and we can go through that with them. And it's not just the physical sciences. Let me just say that straight away. We're hoping that it'll have an English professor so that then they can teach how to communicate, because mm-hmm. communication is one of the most important things of the lot. Mm-hmm. We can have students from audio engineering and they can come in and they can help with how do we do podcasts? How do we actually get this to work so that people actually care? Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have this idea. Let's write up a one pager so we can actually give this to potential investors and how do we communicate this in different ways? Or business students. For example, one of your investors, Darcy. Now, Darcy's actually in the insurance world, but he's hiring people who are business students. He could come in and see the business students on the ground doing work, and therefore they'll get hired directly into his company.
Wow.
So there's that runway straight out of the door.
Yeah.
Where business can go, oh, you've done this work with us already. Here you go. Here's your position. Mm-hmm. And so that's like the 3 to 5 year goal. And we're starting to pitch that right now to the research office, and we're trying to get people involved and interested in it. Mm-hmm. But it should be fun. Should be interesting. Yeah.
Looking forward to seeing the results and maybe having you guys back on.
Yeah.
We can always hope. We can always hope.
We always finish with, do you guys have any advice for listeners, students, or faculty, anyone at all, any kind of advice?
Don't let the word no dissuade you. Hmm. Perceive that as the next opportunity. If you have something you're passionate about, go for it, drive for it. That passion will show through. You will attract the right people. It just sometimes takes time and effort. So if you got something you want, don't quit. There are resources out there available. So look around.
Use the resources you have available. So Trevor actually came and gave a talk to my class the other day. And one of the first things he stressed in that class was, if you know somebody that can help you, ask for the help. Mm. Don't just sit back and expect them to jump over themselves to give you that help. Step forward and ask. Mm-hmm. Worst case scenario, they say no. And that's on them, not you. Mm-hmm. So ask for the help that you can get and use the resources you have. So one of the things I tell all my undergrads is use office hours. And nobody ever turns up. Well, that's a resource that's free to you. Mm-hmm. And then you go and pay for a tutor when you don't come to office. What's going on with that? Use the resources you have is the real key. Mm-hmm. And get involved. If you want to be involved in research, get involved in research. If you want to not be involved in research, don't get involved in research. But have fun with what you do.
Mm-hmm. It's that easy.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you guys for being with us today. I hope all the best in your future.
Yeah. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for having us today.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's all we have for today's episode of Research Recasted. If you want to support this podcast, you can visit Research Recasted on your favorite podcast platform to find new episodes every 2 weeks. Also, don't forget to check us out on Instagram at Research Recasted, where you can leave us a like, give us a follow, or send us a message if you have any follow-up questions from today's episode. This has been Research Recasted, a knowledge mobilization podcast, brought to you by the Office of Research Services and the Faculty of Fine Arts and Communications at McCune University. Funding for the podcast is partially provided by the Government of Canada through the Research Support Fund. Research Recasted is hosted and produced by Brooklyn Logician and Natalie Smattis. Music, sound design, and editing is by Natalie Smattis. Research, copy editing, and scripting is by Brooklyn Logician. And our executive producer is Hugh McKenzie.